How's everybody doing? Is anybody here? Is this our first night? Okay, we got some newcomers. Good. Well, I'm never quite sure if the classes start growing or they start shrinking, so I always have to kind of ask. I think we probably had some of both. Some people drop out. They'll be back. And you're welcome to come at any time. I mean, if you can't make one, that's fine. And they are being recorded. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of meditation, right? So I don't know. You could listen to it. Okay, so the people that have come for the first time, again, welcome. My name is David Maclis. There's a five-week class on Introduction to Meditation, Meditation 101. There's material on the website that you can pull. Has everybody been able to get that all right? Anybody have any difficulty with that? So some of the meditations you can read and then work on. So, and like I told everybody last week, don't expect something to happen. It's all about getting okay with nothing really happening. And once we scrape away all that stuff, then good things kind of evolve. So we'll start out with doing a little meditation. Remind everybody to turn their cell phones off or put them on vibrate or whatever, if you could. And then also just take a minute and you know, I think it's great that everybody came back. There's all the other stuff you could be doing tonight, and you chose to come here. So the goal, obviously, was you wanted to benefit your mind and maybe help some other people or whatever. Just feel better about yourself. That's the whole point. That's the whole point behind it. So anything you can do to make yourself feel better about this, it's doing a good thing. So when we do meditation, what we're going to do, if you're sitting on the floor, you know, you can sit on a zafu, which is one of these round cushions. Maybe put a square one underneath it sometimes helps. We tend to sit, you know, however your legs are comfortable, crossed, obviously, but, you know, how you cross them is kind of up to you. Try to sit with your hips a little bit higher than your legs. Usually that helps straighten your back out a little bit. And if you're sitting in a chair, try to sit, you know, comfortable in a chair, your feet flat on the floor. If you're short, you can put a pillow underneath your feet, kind of help you out a little bit. Try not to lean against the back of the chair, so we try to keep our back straight. And if you're on the floor, it's like a stack of coins stacked up. Try to imagine your spine like that. Your arms just comfortable. Usually try to keep them out a little bit, allow for air circulation. Your hands resting either on your knees, or you can a more traditional pose like our Buddha's doing behind us here is a right hand inside the left hand with the thumbs touching. And just about navel height. The top of your head should be pulled up just a little bit like there's a string attached to it. And your chin will be down a little bit. The tongue goes at the roof of your mouth just behind your front teeth. And then your eyes either closed or if you want to leave them slightly open, that's fine too. Let a little light in. And try to focus on a spot on the floor, at least. Focus your gaze at the spot on the floor or something in front of you that you can kind of focus on. And we'll start out taking a few breaths in and out. And as you breathe in, visualize, if you can, kind of a pure light going in and traveling around your body. And as you exhale, picture all the negativities kind of coming out like soot and maybe moving off into the universe. And we'll take a few two or three breaths like that. And then once you get settled, why don't you just focus on your breathing. And if this is your first time, sometimes the best bet is to count your breathing. Inhale, exhale is one, and then doing it again is two. And when your mind drifts, the objective is to gently pull your mind, your focus, back to your breathing. Alternatively, we can do a bare tension meditation and just focus on the breath itself, either the cool air going in the nostrils, warm air coming out, or the rise and fall of your abdomen. And just kind of focus your attention on that. And again, if your mind drifts, just pull it back to the breathing. We'll bring our attention back. I ring a bell when it's time to come back. How do we do? Were you able to focus on your breathing? Did your mind drift? Pull it back. Drift. Pull it back. Every time we pull it back, that's a rep, right? So that's what we're supposed to be doing, is pulling our mind back to our breathing and refocus on it. It seems pretty boring. But there's a purpose to it. And as we get better and better at it, we'll find it more and more pleasurable, and we'll be able to focus our attention on things that, you know, a lot of people look for some peace in this, and our minds go all over the place all the time. So as we strengthen our mind, our ability to focus our attention, you'll be able to focus on things and put your attention on something, and it'll feel pretty good, you know? You'll be able to, a thought will come up, and you'll be able to let it go, or at least push it off to the side for a little bit, you know? And that's the goal, is to kind of give ourselves a little bit of space. We'll talk more about that over the next few weeks, too. So how, those of you that were here last week, how did it go? Did you practice? That was the homework, right? Practice for a few minutes, whatever you could do over the last week, every day. How many people did it? Okay. How many people tried to do it anyway, right? Tried it a little bit, yeah. What are some of the barriers? Well, let me back up. Those of you that were able to do it, what did you notice? Did you have difficulties? Was it easy? What? Yes, sir.
I wasn't here last week, but I'm working on this anyway. I found it the first time I've been able to really not have salt for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And then I found the salt up. It's a really weird thing. Just when I thought I was getting where I should be. I said, I'm wasting my time, but I'm not thinking.
Is a waste of time. When you know better, you say? Did anybody else have that thought? Is that what maybe prevents people from doing this every day, do you think? I know for me that when I started, it was like, oh, you know, there's things I need to get done, and I don't have time to sit and breathe. Yeah. Does anybody have that taken? Yeah. When you have that revelation while you're sitting on the pillow, I mean, it'll come up. And then you'll start doing the to-do list, you know, while you're sitting there. Thinking about all the things you should be doing instead of sitting here. Some point down the road, a long way down the road, you might realize that all of this is a waste and that's the only thing worth doing. You know? Yes, ma'am.
I have more trouble getting started. I don't think it's a waste. I think it'd be really good and really helpful. But somehow, now stopping all of this and doing that.
Stopping what you're doing?
It's 7 o'clock Tuesday.
It's on the schedule.
Yeah.
Okay. But at home, it's not on the schedule?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know how easy it would be to put it on the schedule, but it's like doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do other people have that same thing? You know, so you know. I think thinking that you should be doing this is a good start. Well, no, I mean that's kind of how you get the motivation to do that. The same with thinking. I think I need to start eating better. I need to start exercising or something like that. You've got to have that desire to do that. And the thought of thinking that that's even possible. So that's not a bad thing, necessarily, because maybe a month ago you never even had the thought that you should be doing this. So at least you're getting closer.
When I first started, it was making time to do it. Now it's kind of like taking a shower.
Yeah.
Anyway, like a lifestyle, just like exercising, because I work out at the gym, body, mind, and everything.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, if I don't do it, I feel like something missed out of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Like taking a shower or eating lunch or dinner or something.
Yeah, and you'll find that that'll happen. If you get in the habit of doing the practice, if you go then for a few days without, if I have to travel and I don't get a chance to sit, I find that it, you know, I can tell a difference. You can tell a difference. So, other thoughts? Other barriers? Good experiences? Yes, sir.
I'd say folks that are just getting started with this, I kind of just got started myself a couple of months ago. I started trying to teach myself off YouTube videos and reading and those sorts of things.
Uh-huh.
And I have lots of experiences, too, where I can't turn my mind off on things going on, but I'm getting better and better at shutting it off. And when I hit those points when I can't actually do that, I feel significantly better.
When you can't actually do it?
I can't shut it down. And you know, maybe I can't do it for most of the session, but for a couple of minutes I can go blank.
Yeah.
Finish.
Yeah.
Much better.
Yep. It's a practice. It really is, and you have to just kind of keep chipping away at it, and don't get discouraged, like you said. That's why they call it practice. Uh huh. Yep. Absolutely. And you never stop. You never really stop. You get more addicted to it, but you never stop. You know, you want to go further and further with it. So you know, again, keep it up. Keep trying. Did we work on? I know we had a couple of different meditations. We talked about the focus, which is counting the breaths, right? And then we went over bare tension. That was a bare tension meditation. So we looked at just following, focusing on the breath, you know, and just kind of letting things go. Did you see a difference in those two? Or so one of them, the focus, the counting is concentration. And the bare attention is more mindfulness, just being aware, totally aware. How do you think those two are similar or different? Have you explored that at all yet? Or see how they're connected? Did any of you try being mindful when you drove home last week? Did you? How did that feel? Did you notice anything different about your driving?
More attentive, maybe.
More attentive? Was it distracting? I guess if it was more attentive, it wasn't distracting, was it? Anybody else try that? Try doing something mindfully? Do you notice the difference between those two things? How's concentration and being mindful different, do you think? Okay. Okay.
So for me, it's surrounding concentration is more of that focus on something.
That's it.
Like an end goal, in the sense with concentration versus mindfulness, just being aware of where you are.
Okay. No, that's very good. That's exactly it.
TikTok Han's view of mindfulness, where you're present in the moment with any activity you're doing, whether it's washing dishes, taking a shower, brushing your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of being in that moment.
Good. The two go hand in hand, do you think? Okay. Kind of keep that in your mind, and we'll, you know, that's something you just want to kind of explore. And you want to start, what'll happen here is you'll start observing your own thoughts. We talked a little bit about concept of metacognition, I think, last week, where you know we can see our own thoughts and emotions as they arise, as opposed to getting pulled into them and just letting them take control, right? Normally we go through life just letting whatever happens kind of take control. It gets our attention. We focus on that until something else bright and shiny gets our attention. You know, we focus on that. And emotions that arise, anger, jealousy, things like that, negative and positive emotions. But we're a little stickier with the negative stuff, you know. We're like, I think they said we're Velcro to the negative and we're like Teflon to the positive, right? So, you know, we let that emotion, that seed of emotion kind of take control and just kind of fill us up. And we get carried away by it. But as you begin to become more aware of your thoughts and emotions, you can just kind of label them and then say, all right, here comes that thing, you know. And then with practice, we'll talk more about this too, that we can decide whether that benefits us or that harms us, and then we can make some choices, you know. The bad ones we can let go of, and the good ones we can kind of hang on to more. So. So, what is mind? What is our mind? Any thoughts on that? This is a light discussion. I'm sorry.
In Buddhist terms, I think it's kind of like your collection of thoughts.
Okay.
Thinking about it.
Okay. It's our collection of thoughts. It's kind of our mind is kind of clear and all-knowing. Okay. And so is our brain... No.
Is
our mind our brain? No, okay. Just like I'm not that hand. Did we talk about kind of do a deconstruction meditation last time a little bit? No, okay. But, you know, if you stop and think about each of your parts and ask, who am I? Am I that? Am I that hand? You know? And you can kind of deconstruct this thing that you call me, and you've removed all the parts, and then this me is still there, you know? And it's not your brain, right? It's kind of the nature of our awareness. So I think to your point, maybe it's a collection of our thoughts. But our mind, so there's senses involved, right? There's the nature of my eye awareness, my hearing, my taste. It can pick up on these things, and then it can make judgments about those a lot of times, right? So the mind and the body are not the same, but they're connected. We'll have to agree with that, I think. And our mind is a source of happiness and suffering. What do you think about that? No? Yes? Maybe? Huh?
Strongly agree,
but I see some no, maybe not.
I think the brain is a source of suffering. It's thinking all the time.
Okay.
The mind is somewhere beyond that.
I think it's the delusions in the mind that cause the suffering.
Okay.
The mind is the ability to control those delusions.
The mind has the ability to control the solution. All right. Yeah. That's the goal, huh? Is to be able to control it.
Are we equating mind with like spirit or essence?
I don't know.
The same equivalency, I guess? Because it sounds like when you have the... You know, the mind's not any part of the body, so I would equate that with the essence of a person or their spirit, for that fact. Because the mind goes on beyond death, which is...
That's the argument, right?
That would be the argument, so that means the spirit would be equivalent to mind.
Mm-hmm.
The spirit goes on beyond death.
Well, but in Buddhist terms, does spirit exist before you're born? That's a term. Mind has no beginning and no end, and it's clear, and it can perceive things, and then these obstructions or confusions come in, which are just your misguided thoughts. And I think that goes a little bit beyond spirit, I think.
So obscurations.
Yeah.
We have things that kind of cloud the mind, our thoughts and emotions. So the idea is that the mind is kind of broad and expansive and clear. And then thoughts and emotions arise, and we become attached to those, and that creates our suffering. And stripping those away can create our happiness. Yes, sir?
Where do the thoughts and emotions come from?
Ah, there's your homework for next week. Yeah, where do they come from? It's interesting to try to trace them back to the source, you know. But you could, when you start observing them and trying to figure out where they come from, I don't know. It's like bubbles coming out of somewhere, you know. And they start small and they get bigger. And as we kind of wrap our thoughts and emotions, we kind of spin it and we keep it growing. Ego kind of has a whole lot to do with that. You know, but the whole idea of suffering and happiness being in our head is kind of basic to Buddhism. So I was thinking the other day, you see, I was taking a shower and the water got what I would define as cold, right? It was 98 degrees. That's kind of a uncomfortable shower, right? But if I was going swimming and the water was 98 degrees, I'd find that kind of miserable too, I think. You know, ooh, it's warm swimming water. So is that water warm or is that cold? You know, it's just all perception. And a lot of it has to do with how, you know, what we, our expectations of what we define as reality around us. And that comes through, a lot of it comes through habits. You know, so the part of this is to be able to kind of strip away what we have predefined as being reality and begin to question whether that's real or not. You know, and just watching and observing and questioning things as it come up. And that's part of the purpose behind the focus meditations as we get better and better at that, is we just begin to drill in on things and question, is that valid? And we find a lot of the stuff that we believe isn't necessarily valid, and that we can change it. So, the mind like an open sky. So if we picture our mind, and we'll do another meditation, mind like sky, and there's another one that you can get, the mind like the ocean. And they're very similar, where we're going to picture our mind as expansive, like the sky. And our thoughts and emotions are just like clouds that bubble up or come by. And they're just kind of floating in the sky. I like the one with the ocean, because I picture myself like in, you know, those aquariums where you're going down, you're underneath the glass and the big glass wall. And my mind being like the water and the fish swimming around in it are just thoughts and emotions. And normally we focus on the fish, but if we focus on the water or in the sky, if we focus, we try to imagine our minds being the sky itself, then we recognize that maybe the clouds are just kind of part of that. So let's get comfortable again. And feet flat on the floor, back straight, arms resting at your side, your hands in your lap. Top of your head pulled up a little bit. Jaw down. Tongue at the roof of your mouth. Behind your front teeth, and your eyes closed or partially closed. And then take a few breaths in and out to try to let your mind, the thoughts and everything, just kind of let them settle. Kind of set your motivation. We're going to do this to help bring about some benefit. And start watching your breath. Allow your stomach to rise and fall very naturally and comfortably. Then loosen your concentration just a little bit. And kind of emphasize the thought of mindfulness, just being aware. Let your mind be kind of attentive and observant to whatever comes up, regardless of what it is. Don't let identify with any of the mental elements, just watch them. Then allow them to rise, observe them, and pass away without getting involved. Just be aware. Then let your mind and your attention expand to kind of fill the entire sphere of experience of consciousness. Try to forget that there's an observer and something being observed. And just imagine your experience, your consciousness as being like the sky. Completely clear, vast, open. Allow that awareness and wisdom to kind of shine through the clarity of the sky, just like the sun shines through. Sometimes clouds fill the sky, obscure the sunshine, but the sky doesn't get upset. It doesn't identify with the clouds, doesn't judge, and they just pass through. Mind get clouded up? Are you able to let go of the clouds? What happens when the cloud comes in and you can't let go? It becomes a storm. Oh, that's good. So why what is it that makes it difficult to let go of that thought? Please.
I feel like I have a very short attention span.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
Maybe, I'm sure it's not just me, but every little sound is almost distracting.
Yeah.
The conditioner going on and on.
The train. Yeah. We haven't had the train tonight.
It's not significant, but my mind is drifting to.
Uh-huh.
I'm not thinking of the to-do list or anything, but every little letter. Oh, there's a
yeah. So what would happen when it comes up then? Do you get hooked onto it?
No, I just feel like I lose the clear.
Okay.
You know, I have to get back to that space.
Did anybody else have that same problem? She said when some little sound comes up, she felt like she was losing the clarity and then have to get back to that space.
Not having that kind of train of thought. And there are times when kind of thing happen and not have that linear thought process happening. That's a success. But then, you know, a few seconds later, something clicks and I start, not literally, well, maybe later, and I start having those linear thoughts, and then it's a matter of trying to get back into just like that. I forget how you put it, but letting the sounds just kind of happen and you just experience
it. Letting go of them.
I think it was more like, oh, okay, I slipped and now I'm not doing that right. And I have to, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah. So was that frustrating?
Yeah, well, maybe not frustrating, but, you know.
Discouraging? No, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm sorry.
You know, I guess I want to learn and I want it to click.
Okay, okay.
I wouldn't say discouraged or frustrating, but just, I guess I'd just like to understand what, you know, the process.
Okay. So, you feel like you're not being successful by when those things distract you? Okay. Okay. So, but the whole... What did you do prior to taking this class when those things distracted you?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
this is my first class.
Okay. How many, for those of you that are second class, being distracted, how does that make you feel? Is it a problem when something comes up? Do you see that as an issue? Okay. So when you recognize that you're not being focused, that's a success. Okay. So don't think that I'm not being focused, so I failed. I've recognized that I'm not being focused. That's what we're trying to do. Okay. And it sounds kind of counterintuitive, maybe in some degree, but. Prior, you didn't recognize you're being distracted, you know? So step number one is, wow, here I am distracted. And for me, it was discouraging because I was like, oh, I'm never going to get this, you know? Until someone said, well, that's it, to recognize that you're being distracted.
Yeah,
that's what you're supposed to be doing. Yeah.
Is it a failure when you're having a pretty good stretch and, then you find yourself thinking, wow, I'm
it's happening. Yeah, no, that's a success. Yeah, yeah. You know, you got little spots, that's good. You know? If you recognize I can't get little spots, that's good. All right? I know that sounds weird, but that's the point. That's what we're trying to do. Is we have to be aware of that distraction. And that's not a failure. That's what we're supposed to be doing. So given that, I mean, how many of the things that we go through in the day to day are delusions? How many things distract us? How many times do our mind get pulled one way or the other? A lot, huh?
Constantly.
Yeah, in a minute. In a day, even when you sit down, you know, and you recognize there's a moment of clarity, there's some guilt that goes along with that. Like, I'm not supposed to be doing this stuff. I got things to do, you know. But if our mind is that clear openness, and our distractions are what causes our problems. Now we like some of those distractions. We like a lot of distractions, you know. But those distractions cause a lot of problems for us. You know, things like anger. So if instead of a click on the thermostat, you had a thought of somebody did something to me. Somebody cut me off on the highway. All right? So now what happens to our mind with that thought? Where does that go? Do we let that go? What happens? I mean, all sorts of things that happen. right? Road rage kind of comes out of that moment for some people. Most of us have enough control. I don't know that's true. I'd like to think that most of us have enough control that we recognize we get angry, we get the irritation, our blood pressure goes up, our heart rate goes up. We think for a minute, maybe I can catch up with this guy and get even. We also think, what kind of story goes along with that? We think this guy spent all day planning to cut me off. You know? Do we think, you know, maybe he just got laid off from work and he's got to go home and tell his family. And he was being mindless. How many of us, that's the first thought that arises? How many of you think that's probably more true than the fact that he thought all day about how he's going to run me off the road? That's kind of narcissistic, isn't it? But those positive things don't come up nearly as quick as the negative things do. But why not? Well, you know, our lizard brain kind of takes over. Did I mention the lady stealing the shopping cart? Oh, okay. So, I get off on these little tangents, I apologize. So I was driving to work and there's a square block, and on one road, the main road, there's a Harris Teeter shopping center. And on the parallel road behind it, I saw this little lady, she's kind of an eccentric lady in our neighborhood, pushing a shopping cart. So what's the first thought that comes up in my mind? I can't believe she stole that shopping cart. You know? Now, for the next block and a half, I'm thinking, I can't believe that lady stole that shopping cart. But how do I know she wasn't taking a shopping cart back? And in fact, she probably was taking a shopping cart back. But that's not where my mind went. So we have this negative stuff that pops up all the time. Creates anger, creates envy, jealousy. All of our, you know, greed, everything, arrogance. And yet we like those stories. We like that soap opera. You know, we like to feed it.
Are you saying that in general our minds are predisposed to negativity first?
Yep. Yep. I'm sorry, what was the last thing? So it's habits. It's habits that we've got. And over years of practicing these habits, they build up what we define as reality. And we do. We're more prone to the negativity than we are the positive things. That's kind of hardwired into us too, you know, the fight or flight thing. Someone's gonna get our food, you know, or you know, if I don't eat something, someone's gonna eat me. But now it's road rage. Lizard man comes out on the highway, right? The dinosaur. But we can overcome that. All we have to do is, the whole purpose is to sit and observe and just question these thoughts and emotions as they arise. And we can begin to look whether there's validity to it. Or are we making up a story? Generally, it's made up. But we can make up good stories as easily, well, not easily, but with some training and some exercise. I mean, thinking that guy cut me off because he had to go home, he got laid off, he's worked at this company for 30 years, he got laid off today, he's got to go home and tell his family, he's got two kids in college. I mean, that whole story, now that creates a sense of compassion, right? It's like, go on. You know, you need to get off and go deal with that. But our minds don't go there. But it's just a matter of choice.
Our memories, too, can not be what they really were. I think that's a lot of, well, personally, my problem.
Tell me more about that.
You visualize in your mind what may have happened to you, say, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you think it over, and in reality, that's not exactly what happened.
Yeah. That's right. You take that on. And we build that story. We put layer on layer on layer. But we do the same with other people with a negative anger. There's people that are angry at each other, you know, been angry for 25, 30 years, and they don't remember why. But they're justified in it, whatever it was, you know. So, any other thoughts about that? You know, the whole idea behind this is just we want that space. When you practice, when you do the meditation, you got that, wow, there's some space there. You know, there's a thought that I need to fill that space up because I'm not supposed to have empty space. I need to be doing something. But the idea of creating some space gives us some room to where we can then begin choosing those thoughts and emotions. And does this one serve me well? Can I change that? Does this one feel good? You know, does generosity feel good? How can I do more of that? Greed doesn't feel good. How can I let go of that one? And it's just a matter of changing our perceptions. My stomach's making noises. Any other thoughts? You know, with the kids in prison, the idea is that space, you know, all you need is a little bit of space before the time when somebody does something to irritate you and you react, you know, that you can begin to kind of tease out that thing that you call anger and just let go of it. And now that's hard to do. That's really hard to do. But with practice, you can begin to do that. Because you realize, they realize, well, they don't, they're 15 years old. They don't always realize it. But adults in the prison system begin to realize that, you know, anger put me here. A lot of times that's the case. And that was a choice at some point. But it's our habits. You know, our habits kind of over and over again, we reinforce those habits. They worked. They seem to have worked for us, and then we just become those habits. Think about, I want you, we're going to have you break up in pairs, small group activity. And either pairs or triads. Think about a situation that might have occurred to you recently, a problem that maybe created a negative mind for you, and how you might have looked at that differently to have made something positive or at least neutral out of it. That's a stretch. Is it not? Or no? Some of our classes, we take the little mazes, the paper mazes. So I have people do a maze. And, you know, hold your hand up when you're done and then have them flip it over and it's the exact same maze and they do it again, you know, and it takes about half the length of time to do that. So that's essentially neuroplasticity. The first time is like, I got to get through this maze, all right? The second time is like, all right, I know how to get through this maze. And then if I did that again 3, 4, 5 times, it would just be like a rat running a maze, right? And now we've made that connection. So when I give you a challenge, like think of something that was negative that you could turn around to have been something positive, the first time you do that is going to be like going through that maze for the first time. But then as that arises, you know, the road rage thing, it becomes easier and easier and easier, and then that becomes a new habit. So now you get to think about something and talk to somebody else about it. Okay, now, ding, think about something, a negative thing, negative mind, and how responding differently or thinking about it differently might have changed it. Hello, bell works pretty good, doesn't it? Just enough. All right. How'd that go? Were you able to come up with something? Anybody want to share? Anybody? Anybody? Yeah, go ahead.
We were talking more about... we were talking more about kind of negative thoughts directed at specific people, that sort of thing. And that's not exactly what this is, but
that's close enough.
But I was talking about driving home, being stuck in traffic. I've been in some of these sessions before in a previous round of these classes, and so I've implemented some of what we talked about. And so using some of that, getting stuck in traffic, like on the Beltline, instead of being focusing on, this car in front of me isn't moving, nobody's moving, what am I... When it would rain, it would be... And I'm sitting there. I'm not talking about going 70 miles an hour. But when it would rain, I'd turn off the wipers sitting there. It was just incredible. I'd look to watch the rain on the windshield and not be focused on, why aren't we moving? What's happening? Why can't I get home? But enjoying that right then,
yeah,
for what it was, because I'm not going to make, 3,000 cars in front of me going faster.
I bet you could. No, that's perfect. So you took a negative situation, not necessarily, that's what you're supposed to do. Look on the bright side, what the heck? It wasn't like you could make, you could have said something wonderful about sitting in the traffic, but you just enjoyed the moment. Just ended up being mindful in a moment. So that was good. Anything else? Anybody have an experience with a person that they're able to turn around? Yes, please.
Sometimes just not reacting.
Uh-huh.
If someone, I had a colleague who just kind of was like abusive with me verbally, and I just didn't engage. I didn't say, well, no, that's not true, or no, I didn't do that. You just kind of let that person say and not engage, and it's a freedom.
Yeah,
it's a freedom to not be reactive and to just observe that kind of behavior and realize. I kind of realized it really wasn't about me; it was about her.
Yeah.
And it was kind of freeing, to think that way rather than to just, instinctively snipe back.
Did you have to refrain from sniping back?
Yeah.
What do you think triggered that? I'm not going to get engaged.
Well, this kind of practice, just being
okay.
Sort of being mindful about this. I've been working on it really over the past few months and just recognizing that's the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. That's huge. That's big.
Yeah.
There it is. So at first it's kind of freeing. First you have to recognize, here I go, And then make the active choice not to engage. It's a dance, right? Once you pull in, then they're going to get more defensive. It's a spiral. And it's never going to end well. It's never going to end up with a group hug and kumbaya and all that stuff. It's just not going to end up well, right?
Right.
Just one more thing that, and then at some point, and there's some meditations that are practiced at the center, where you can begin developing compassion. If you stop and look deep enough, you recognize that person is really suffering.
Yes.
They got to be really miserable to act like that. It's got to hurt worse on their side than it does on this side, especially if you can disengage from it. And then when that kind of shines through, that changes a lot of things too.
You're right. I would just add to that, 8 months ago, I would have been intent on proving her wrong.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Things can change.
They can. But it just takes a practice and it just takes an effort. And your blood pressure stayed low, and your heart rate stayed low. And then you can begin to develop some compassion for somebody like that and just like, ugh, how sad.
Exactly.
you know? Yeah. So I'm sorry, you were going
to
say.
Actually, into sort of a question about that. My issue with that would be, and in general, I don't necessarily wouldn't react, but the part that is difficult is the internalizing of like, okay, I'm not going to react and I'm not going to engage because I know it's not going to go anywhere. But then later on, internalizing the sort of negative things that that person has said to me,
right,
not being able to let that go, or the I wish I had said this, or I should have said this, or you know, I just personally, I'm a person. I was just saying to her, I think it's like rude and impolite to to react in that way. And in place of that, I just keep it inside, and the negative kind of stays inside.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what your thoughts would be on sort of that.
I think you can work on that too. I think that's actually further ahead. This is just my opinion, right? So we have the outwardly kind of reaction that exists. Then there's the people that internalize it and they say, well, that's bad. You know, and the therapy, it says, oh, you need to just wail on somebody or something. And that's cathartic. That's a good thing. I can't buy that. You know, but you hold it on the inside. But you can begin to let that go too. You know, you recognize that now my mind is causing the suffering. It's not that person anymore, right? It's just my own mind, my own thoughts, the record player, the tape going over and over again in my head. And, you know, you can begin to let go. And you weren't here last week, I think, but I reread a little thing about milk. Do you remember we talked about that? The you know, with practice, I don't think I brought it with me, but at first the person, you know, just kind of goes over the top. Somebody forgot milk, partner forgot milk, you go over the top. And then, you know, you reach the point where, well, you just kind of grumble about it, but you don't have any outward signs. And then, you know, you begin to tell yourself, well, people, you know, they've done some good things for me. They forgot milk. It's, you know, you begin to let go of it. And then further on down the road, it's just like, we don't have any milk. Now what are we going to do, you know? So let's do something else. So, you know, you begin to kind of gradually let go of those things. But it's still the same practice. It's the same thing. So.
With the non-retaliation, years ago, I actually practiced this was hard. This is hard. Because I was with a company and it went belly up. But I had enough on my immediate supervisor, enough, it would have ruined her reputation if I'd have submitted it. And I was very close to doing that because I did not agree with the company. In fact, I disagreed and argued with them over certain things, and they did not like it, so they got rid of me. But I could have ruined her and possibly got her terminated. But I thought about it and very much meditated on it, and I was like, I love her family and her, and as a sister, I love her and her family as much as I would love my own sister and my own family. And I could not do that to her, no matter how badly I felt towards a previous employer. I just couldn't do it. And months later, after the fact, I made up with her, and we're friends to this day, and we will always be friends, and she'll probably come to visit me and my family and stuff. So it does work. At that time, I was very sore and with them, but after time goes by, you get kind of, you soften that heart, and then you can reach out to people and stuff. And
yeah, and it just takes time and practice. You know, you just have to kind of keep working on it. And that'll eventually kind of ease up and ease up and ease up. So think about the advantages and the disadvantages of seeking. You know, we think our happiness lies out there, and our misery lies out there. But you know, it's all inside of our head. It's all inside here. We just believe with all our heart it's out there. And I think about, you know, the things that we seek, the things that you want, you know, the things that you bought. I mean, we talk about this, I asked the kids, think about something that you wanted really bad, and you bought it or you got it. And for a while, that created a sense of pleasure. But then what happens over time, you know? You want something else. Like, for some of us, it's like the next day, all right, that's done. Time to go shop some more, you know? There's always something else. But does that ever scratch the itch, you know? We just keep knocking it out there, trying to get ahead. But I don't know what we're trying to get ahead of, you know? We really are ahead. There's some meditations that we can do at some point when you start to realize to live in Raleigh, North Carolina, or live in this area, I mean, we're ahead of, I don't know what percentage of the global population and just in what we have available. Yes, please.
South Africa, and got three kids, and I was in the other day, and we were talking, and I said, how long have you been in the States? And he said, 16 years. And I said, do you think you'll stay? And he said, Jane, this is paradise. He's like, you don't understand. And I didn't have my first pair of shoes until I was 16.
Yeah.
They were, you know, an uncle's shoes at the college. And I didn't have my first pair of underwear until I was 21. And one meal a day, and I'm sitting there ordering way too much. sometimes it's a mind shift.
It is. Yeah, and our teacher talks about, you know, I've got 5 food lines within walking distance of my house, you know? And we've got more food in the pet food aisle than most of them have in a whole grocery store, you know? And he says, yet there's more depression here than anywhere else in the world. Well, we're up there high. So it's not out there. The things that provide pleasure for us really aren't out there. It's just a false thing that we're chasing after. It's all in our heads. And when we recognize that, and that, you know, it's not to mean that we can't enjoy the things. You know, you got rain falling on the windshield. That becomes pleasurable. You know, chocolate. There's all sorts of little things that you can do. Well, there's a chocolate meditation. Anybody do another chocolate meditation? Take a Hershey chocolate. Kabat-Zinn does this, or with the mindfulness-based stress reduction classes, I think. They take a piece of chocolate and just give yourself, do a 5-minute meditation on it and smell it and think about, you know, sometimes I'm going to think about all the people that were involved in bringing that there, that thing sitting in my hand. How many people were involved in getting that to me? And put it in your mouth and just let it melt. And don't, you know, when I eat chocolate, I'm usually thinking about the next piece while I'm chewing on this one. And I miss this one, right? Because my mind's already on the next one. But just focus on what you're eating just at that moment and just let it melt. It'll be the best piece of chocolate you ever had. And you won't want the whole bag. You know, it's almost like, well, that did the trick, you know. But we don't do things like that. We're always looking for the next. As soon as this one's over, before this one's over, we're looking for the next one. So just you know, that's something to be mindful of. When you go into the store, all that stuff, and they know it. They line all that stuff up there by the cash register, impulse buying, right? And the little kids want to do it. They want to grab that stuff. You know, people want to get it. So try to let go of the impulses and see what it feels like. Or recognize, at least recognizing that doesn't necessarily bring what we would define as happiness. It's just kind of a false something or other there. All right. Any other comments or anything? Thoughts? Things you want to share? All we're trying to do is get our mind focused, let go of some things, and begin to discern what's reality and what's not. Knowing reality is a hard thing, isn't it, Chris? The ultimate reality. Yeah, that's the whole goal behind this person behind us. All those books talk about the ultimate reality. So we're going to do another meditation. This is called 9-round breathing meditation. And it's more of a visualization. Yeah. So, but it's a good way to kind of clear your mind. And a lot of people like to do this before they start just a breathing meditation. So what we'll do is, you know, we'll get in our postures, and then we're going to take a breath in through our right nostril and exhale through the left. Do that three times. And then we're going to shift, and we're going to do it just the opposite three times. And then we're going to do both nostrils in and out three times. And if you look at there's channels. The belief is there's channels, and you can kind of visualize this. The central channel starts right between the eyebrows and runs over the top of my head and down my spine, down my spinal column, and ends about four fingers below my navel. And then there's a right channel. It goes in the right nostril, goes back, and kind of runs parallel with that one down. And then there's one to the left nostril that goes parallel and down through. And then they meet at the point four, about four fingers below our navel. So when you inhale through the one side, you know, picture it kind of going into this channel and coming back out through the other one. And then we'll reverse them, and then we'll do the central channel. Okay? Everybody got that? I'll talk us through it as we do it. So get yourself comfortable in your seat, your feet flat on the floor if you're in a chair, back straight, arms comfortable, hands in your lap or on your knees. Top of your head pulling up a little bit, chin down, tongue at the roof of your mouth, and your eyes closed. And then I want you to hold the left nostril closed and breathe in. Imagine the air going in to the right nostril, down the channel. And then close the right nostril and exhale to the left side. And picture all the impurities coming out when you exhale. Breathe in again through the right. Exhale through the left. In through the right. And out through the left. And then switch. We're going to breathe in through the left. Pure light going in. Exhale through the right. Negativities and impurities coming out. To the left, out to the right, and one more time. Now breathe in through both channels. When you exhale, picture it going out to the central channel, coming out the top of your head by your eyebrows, in and out three times. And then just do one of your meditations. Count your breath. Or just watch your breathing. Or do the clear sky meditation. Ben, think for a moment. Try to get your mind wrapped around, you know, how you spent an hour and a half here tonight working on your mind, beginning to become more aware how your thoughts and emotions, how they affect you, and how they might affect people around you. And think about the benefit that this has provided and how it's ultimately going to affect those people which you come in contact. Family, co-workers, even strangers on the highway. Are you able to visualize with the nine round? Anybody like that? Not like it? Not sure about it? Practice it. Any questions or comments before we finish up? So your homework is to try again, you know, to find some spot. Start with 2 minutes. You know, and give yourself the same length of time you give to brush your teeth every day. Say, I can empty my mind, or I can clear my mind, or focus my mind for that long. Okay, and try to do it daily if you can. And then if you can, you know, pick one of the meditations, the clear sky, or the ocean, or the nine round breathing. Experiment with different ones.
Yeah. The nine-round breathing,
mm-hmm.
I find that more constrictive because you're closing off one nostril to get air in,
uh-huh.
I guess, and then you close off another one to bring air in and out. I guess I just find it very constrictive with the inflow and outflow of oxygen and air.
Yeah, probably especially during allergy season. But
yeah,
it might be that, you know, and that, again, for some people, if you find yourself that you have trouble with meditation, then don't do that one. Find something else, you know. So, but if you're drawn to it, go ahead and do it. Go ahead and do it. So there's alternatives. There is no right one. And try to be observant of the difficulties or things that arise and what you do with them and thoughts and things and how you're able to push those aside. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that next week. So, yes, ma'am.
Discussing that it helps you compartmentalize your thought, going in one nose and going out the other,
uh-huh.
Maneuvering through it, and then it makes you really enjoy when you're using both. So it kind of sets you up for like.
What was that? Now explain that to me again. I'm sorry.
I'll use this. Okay.
Okay.
like going in one side and out the other helped you. You know, break it down that you're going to maneuver your breathing and then compartmentalize your breath. And then when you're using both nostrils, it created a new enjoyment of having both your nostrils to breathe.
Okay, good.
Through.
Yeah.
So it kind of set you up for an experience and just a deep breath.
Good. That's good. All right. Yeah. All right. So there's lots of opportunities for experiences. But that, you know, you're observant of those things. And you know, we breathe, I don't know how many times a day, we don't think about it a lot of times. So, all right. Thank you all. Be mindful going home.
Thank you.
You're welcome.